Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 48 of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and today the indie author is Elizabeth Barone, and the novel is A Disturbing Prospect, The River Reaper's Motorcycle Club, Book 1. Very exciting. Glad you're here with me today. I've been sick this week, so my voice is very low. sorry about that. But as it so happens, the excerpt from which I'll be reading today, chapter one of A Disturbing Prospect, is actually kind of this gritty male character, and I think it sort of works. So I don't regret. I regret nothing. Anyway, Elizabeth Barone, and Elizabeth, if that's Elizabeth Barron, and I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, you have my sincere apologies. It is B-A-R-O-N-E. Anyway, I'm going to begin, as always, by reading Elizabeth's Amazon author bio. Elizabeth Barone is an American novelist who writes contemporary romance with suspense, starring sassy belles who choose a different path in life. Her debut novel, Sadie on the Wall, was a quarter finalist in the 2012 Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award contest. She is the author of the South of Forever series and several other books. When not writing, Elizabeth is very busy getting her latest fix of Yankee Candle, spicy Dorito chips, or whatever TV show she's currently binging. Elizabeth lives in northwestern Connecticut with her husband, a feisty little cat, and too many books. All right, very good. And I'm so glad that Elizabeth used an Oxford comma. Elsewise, we might have worried that she was married to a feisty little cat and books. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Good. All right, good. Fun bio here. So Elizabeth's books, I'm looking at her Amazon author page, and it looks like a lot of what we might call darker romance. We have a rock star romance, that is the South of Forever series. And by the way, Book Zero, which I assume is a prequel, is free on Amazon. That's Twisted Broken Strings. And we also have some what look like to be not darker romances. Just One More Minute, Just One More Christmas. These look quite pleasant. The book from which I'm reading today, A Disturbing Prospect, is actually ranking as a romantic suspense. So we do have sort of a suspense thriller aspect here as well. And I'm going to go ahead now and read the Amazon book blurb, that is the book description for A Disturbing Prospect. Cliff. Something inside me is stirring, like a sleeping beast in its lair. For 20 years I've been dead, but Olivia makes me feel alive, wide awake and alert, ready for anything. And I know Lucy, my cousin and only friend in the world, won't have it. She'd be completely right, of course. Olivia is family, Lucy's little sister. Even if she's adopted, even if we didn't grow up together. I share no memories with her, but we share family. Her parents are my aunt and uncle, for fuck's sake. It's one place I can't go, and it's the one place I most want to be. Olivia. Cliff has me doing all kinds of things I don't normally, like thinking about him and sighing like a schoolgirl. I need to get back in the game, keep moving. I can't let him get to me like this. This has never happened before. It's stupid, and it needs to stop. Yes, he's sexy, and he makes me laugh, but I can't let myself get carried away. I can't. Even if he's the only one who can help me, because he's the only other person I know who's taken a life. A Disturbing Prospect is a vigilante biker's romance, and is the first book in the River Reapers Motorcycle Club series. Trigger warning. This book contains themes that may be upsetting to some readers. Please see the list of potential triggers in the foreword section of the book. All right, so that's the book blurb for A Disturbing Prospect. And indeed, there is a list of triggers, a trigger warning inside the book. So if you're interested in the book, but you're worried about that at all, please do read that before you jump into the story. But today we're going to hear the first chapter, which is the beginning of Cliff's story. We find him the day that he gets out of prison. And I think that Elizabeth has written this very cleverly for a couple of reasons. One is that Cliff's voice is very believable to me. Now, I've never been to prison. I'm not a convict, but I am a guy. I am a cisgender male. And I find his sort of inner monologue quite believable. It is a little crass at times, some of the language, so fair warning on that. But again, it's built in very believably and realistically into Cliff's dialogue. So I didn't find it offensive at all. I found it very useful in understanding who he is and where he's coming from. The second thing that I think she's done very well is all the little idiosyncrasies of him coming out into the world from what's obviously been not a very posh life behind bars. You see some prison television shows, and prisoners have access to the internet and even cell phones sometimes, but Cliff has had none of that. He's been well and truly locked away, so it's a little amusing at times. It's as if this character has woken up after 20 years of sleep, like Rip Van Winkle, and he's totally confounded by all of our modern technology. Because, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but the pace of technological advances is just stunning. If you were to actually disappear in a hole in the ground for 20 years right now, you wouldn't recognize the world when you came out. And I found that that aspect of the storytelling really lended a sense of verisimilitude to Cliff's story that I found attractive. So just sharing that little bit there. I first encountered Elizabeth Barone on K-Boards, where I encounter so many authors from whom I read on the podcast. Elizabeth is a regular contributor on K-Boards. She's regularly chiming in on lots of threads. Her avatar and her covers are very familiar sights to anyone who spent any time in the Writer's Cafe there. So I hope you really enjoy hearing this reading from Elizabeth Barone's suspenseful biker romance, A Disturbing Prospect. Just a reminder, as always, this reading does not come from an official audiobook. It is presented and recorded here by me, just for the purpose of this podcast, with the full knowledge and permission of the author. Thanks, Elizabeth. Everybody go check out her stuff if you're interested at all in romance or romantic suspense. And do join me back here again next week for another indie author reading. Thanks. A Disturbing Prospect. River Reapers Motorcycle Club, Book 1, by Elizabeth Barone. Chapter 1. Cliff. The second the sun touches my skin on the other side of the barbed wire chain link fence, I am truly free. It doesn't matter that I have to meet with my probation officer, or that I don't exactly have any place to go. All that's important is I'm not rotting within those cement walls anymore. My 20 years are finally up. My taxi idles, puffs of exhaust eddying into the cold February air. The dead of winter is a shitty time to be homeless, but even that thought doesn't dampen my spirits. Prison wasn't terrible, but it wasn't like being outside. Inside, I was just a caged animal, throwing myself at the bars, bruising and bloodying myself in defiance. I was in segregation more times than I can count, and I'm lucky I got out 5 years early. I'd kiss the fucking ground if the guy behind the wheel wasn't already eyeing me warily. I slide into the back seat, warmth from the heater enveloping me. A sigh nearly escapes my lips. It's been so long since I was really, truly warm. Through the rearview mirror, the taxi driver continues to question my sanity. He isn't prejudiced. "Where to, sir?" he asks, his voice void of any accent. He could be from anywhere America. Actually, the United States could have sunk into the bowels of hell while I was inside, for all I know. Maybe this accent is the new norm. I squint at him, trying to decide whether I've lost my fucking mind or if this is really the way things are now. He even looks racially ambiguous, with a broad hooked nose, green eyes, and olive skin. The newspapers I managed to get my hands on were always old, and the old men hogged the lone fucking TV all day. I have no clue what's going on in the world, or where I'm going. Maybe he takes pity on me, because his eyes soften and he clears his throat. "How long have you been in, sir?" I really wish he'd stop with the sir, but it's better than what I've been called. What I am. Who? 20 years, I tell him. He nods real slow, then he rubs his chin, the stubble not quite poking through yet. It's too early in the day. It's another difference between us. My goatee is scratchy. I didn't have time to shave this morning. "Well," he says finally, "we have a woman president." This I knew. I start to tell him that I haven't been living in a fucking hole, but that would not be true. "Isn't that something?" I reply. He shoves the taxi into drive and pulls away from the only home I've ever known. I've been inside longer than I'd been alive when I went in. A sliver of panic creeps in. I don't know how to cook or how to drive a car. It seems ridiculous, pathetic, and I still don't know where I'm going. I have no one on the outside. At least, I don't think so. During the first year, I had visitors. Then they trickled into phone calls, faded into letters, until finally, nothing. I don't blame them. 20 years is a long time, and Pennsylvania isn't exactly close to home. The taxi driver takes me to a Days Inn. I don't even bother looking through the glass as we drive through the small town. There's not a damn thing here. I use most of the only cash I have left to buy a room for the night, and when I leave the lobby to find my room, the taxi is already gone. Blinking into the winter gloom, it starts to sink in that I don't have any friends, inside or out. I'm a goddamn statistic. But the room has a shower that doesn't run cold after 2 minutes, and I take a half hour to revel in my first real taste of freedom. The hot water sluices over hard muscle I've been careful to build and maintain. My own mother probably wouldn't recognize me. After I step out, I clear the mirror with a hand and take a good look. It's been a while since I looked at my reflection in something other than a mirror that more closely resembled a dented paper towel dispenser. In the pen, everything is constructed with safety in mind, carefully evaluated to ensure that even the most simplest of tools can't be converted into deadly weapons. But anything can be a weapon. Anything. Even my bare hands. The goatee doesn't surprise me. It's familiar and has kept my face warm for 2 decades. It's the crow's feet at the corners of my brown eyes that make me pause. I'm only 38, but even though I don't feel it, I look it. Maybe even 5 years older. A frown creases my forehead. It really shouldn't matter. I'm not entering any beauty pageants anytime soon, and any woman who might be interested would be quick to run in the opposite direction the second she heard about my record. She'd be careless not to. I drape the towel over the hook on the back of the door and stalk out bare as the day I was born. There's no one here to see me, and I'm not too keen on the idea of changing back into those clothes. They were donated to the prison. Never were mine. The clothes I wore the day I was cuffed are long gone, tucked into some forgotten evidence bin, or maybe even burned, since the case was pretty quickly closed. There was no point in pleading innocence. I sit on the bed and eye the phone. I might have one friend out there. It's a long shot, really, but maybe not that long. Snatching the phone from its cradle, I pause. Try to remember how to call someone whose number you don't have. I have no fucking idea. I slam the receiver down, wishing I had a pack of cigarettes, or even one cigarette would do. I'm about to throw back on those moldy old clothes when I remember I can call the front desk. Ask them. For a second, I feel even more pathetic. I'm like an old man with dementia. I'm lucky I don't need help wiping my ass. The outside is so much different than I pictured. The closer I got to my parole hearing, the more convinced I was that there would be some kind of process, a sort of easing into things for the post-release inmate. When I mentioned it to my CO, motherfucker laughed at me and handed me a booklet. The morning of my release, he handed me some cash, my total earnings. 20 years of pennies on the hour, and I can't even afford a second night at a shithole motel. I need to make that call, because it's the only chance I have. Otherwise, I'll be right back in within hours of walking out. Sucking in a breath between my teeth, I pick up the phone again and call the front desk. A chipper female voice answers. A young voice.
Days in front desk. How can I help you?
Hey there, sweetheart, I drawl. My voice is smoked whiskey, smooth but with a bite. I need to look someone up in Connecticut. She draws in a breath, then hesitates.
You're serious?
Her voice lilts. Amused. I lay it on thick, dropping my voice several octaves, still sweet, but low enough to drop panties. Yeah, baby, I really need your help. A giggle caresses my ear before she can collect herself. She's definitely young. I close my eyes for a moment, the memory of another small laugh pricking at me. The anger rises up quickly, fire shooting through my veins. I struggle to stuff it down, to shove the lid on it before it can backdraft, blowing me straight out of the room and right back into the Louisburg pen.
What's the name?
She asks, completely oblivious to the man burning on the other end. Sucking in a deep breath, I manage to slow it for a moment. Lucy Demmel. Saying her name only makes it worse. The panic shoves its way in. I wonder if she's even alive, if she's healthy, safe, or if she's just another statistic, too. I jump up from the bed, pace the room, wait. The receptionist spells out our last name, and the sound of tapping reaches my ears. It's a weird tapping, though. A computer keyboard. I frown. Aren't you going to patch me through? She laughs.
I'm looking her up on Facebook. Hold on.
My eyebrows furrow. Facebook? Before I can ask what the fuck that is, my angel lets out a triumphant, aha! And rattles off a number to me. I fumble for the pen and notepad in the drawer, ask her to repeat it, and jot it down. Are you sure that's really her? I need to know, because I can't take the disappointment.
Lucy Demmel, she says, as if she's reading. 28, lives in Naugatuck, Connecticut, went to Naugatuck High School, she's in a relationship.
Wait. I take another deep breath. How do you know all this?
The age is right. The town, too.
Never mind, I say, even as my angel laughs at me. Flat out laughs, not just amused. She's almost hysterical. How does she look? The laughter dies.
You're not, like, a stalker, are you?
I sigh. She's my cousin. Same last name. Come on, what does she look like? She makes a skeptical sound, like a humph.
Maybe I shouldn't have given you her number. Oh, shit, am I going to get fired? Please don't get me fired. I can't keep a job.
Christ. I've always been a magnet for head cases. Shh, baby, I'm not a stalker. She really is my cousin. Check my room records. My last name is Demmel. But don't call me Clifford or I'll... The threat dies on my lips because it's not an idle one. I blink and wonder how long it'll take for the prison effect to wear off. How long before I'm normal again? I don't even know who I am anymore or what normal is.
She has long red hair, kind of wavy-like, real sad green eyes, and...
Her pause stretches, almost endless.
A beauty mark or mole thing right near her eyebrow.
I almost cry with relief. That's my Lucy.
Her last post... Strength isn't keeping your tears locked up when you're sad. It's saying no to a marriage proposal from the sexiest, sweetest man alive, even when everyone expects you to say yes. Fuck that shit.
She snorts.
What?
She whisper reads it again. That fucked up sense of humor is Lucy, all the way. I rattle off the phone number back at my angel to make sure I got it right. Then hang up. I pick up the phone again and dial the number. It rings, the connection crackly but real. I almost lose my shit. I don't know what I'm going to say, or if she even remembers me. She was so little. Maybe she blocked the whole thing out. A loud male voice booms into my ear.
Please dial the numerical 1 before the area code. This is a recording.
I hang up, muttering a no shit. Clearing my throat, I try again, this time dialing 1. I vaguely remember needing to do that before I went in. This time the call goes through. It rings 5 times, and then my heart stops.
Hey, you've reached Lucy. You know what to do, don't you?
The disappointment shoots into me. My shoulders slump, and I almost drop the phone onto the floor.
Please leave a message after the tone. When you are finished recording, hang up or press 1 for more options.
A shrill beep pierces my ears, and I nearly drop the phone again.
Shit. No, wait. Sorry. Loose.
I pause. Suddenly, I really have no idea what to say.
Yeah, Luce, this is Cliff. I don't know if you remember me. It's been ages since I got a letter from you.
I assumed your parents shut that shit down real fast. Sorry. Well, I guess you're not 8 anymore, so it's okay to swear around you. I'm babbling. Taking a deep breath, I try to make words that won't freak her out. Luce, I know this is asking a lot, and do you even go by Luce anymore, or do you prefer Lucy? I rake my free hand through my hair. I'm fucking this up. Majorly. I let out a low, frustrated sound. Okay, look, I'm at the Days Inn in Louisburg. Fucking Pennsylvania, Luce. I'm just gonna lay it all out here. I have no money, nowhere to go, and I have to stick around at least long enough to see my parole officer, so maybe... Suddenly, I realize how desperate I sound. But I am. Sorry to bother you, Luce. Lucy, just forget it. I hang up. Dressing, I decide I'm better off spending my time finding a job. If I'm going to get out of this ass crack of a town, I'm going to need cash. Fast. There's got to be a diner or something looking for suckers who don't mind bussing tables for minimum wage. And maybe they'll even overlook my record. The odds of me finding a job are even lower than finding Lucy. I figure my angel at the front desk can't possibly save me twice, but maybe she can. Maybe she's from around here and knows of a place that will hire without asking questions. Or she can at least point me to the closest drug dealer so I can start selling too. I really will be a statistic if I don't get my shit together. My hand is on the doorknob when the phone rings. I freeze, then turn in slow motion toward the nightstand where the phone rests. But it keeps ringing, and I have to accept that I'm not imagining it. I dart across the room and grab it, pressing it to my ear. Yeah, Lucy?
Cliff,
she sobs.
Is it really you?
A relieved sigh escapes my lips. It's me, I say with a smile. She sounds so different, yet I'd know that voice anywhere.
You're really out? I can't believe it. I thought you had another 5 years.
Yeah, I got lucky. Overcrowding and good behavior. Mostly. Plus, I had a lawyer that was really good at talking judges into dreamland.
Cliff, holy shit, where are you? I mean, I know where, but when are you coming home?
She's talking so fast, I can barely understand her. I love every second of it. I hate to disappoint her, even after all these years. Luce. I can almost hear her shoulders slump.
You're not coming home?
Not likely. At least, not anytime soon. I'm broke, kid. And
I'll PayPal you some money, she says,
and now she's talking really fast. I strain to understand her, the words like a foreign language. At least her accent is Connecticut. I let her finish, again wishing I had a cigarette. Something to calm my nerves.
Cliff, you there?
Swallowing past the dry lump in my throat, I tell her I am. I've got no clue what you're talking about, Luce.
Okay, just give me your email address.
She's going to think I'm an alien, that the games we played when she was a kid were real. I don't have one. She barks out a laugh.
What?
Oh, no Wi-Fi in prison. Wi-Fi? My head starts to throb.
Like AOL, but wireless.
She laughs again.
Wow, this is so funny. You're like a newborn.
It's good that she can be so positive about this. About anything.
All right, let me think. She hums a little. No email address, and I'm guessing you don't have a bank account either. Jesus, prison is inhumane. Well, there's only one solution. I shrug, because seeing as how I can barely grasp this Wi-Fi stuff, I'm probably going to be blown away by whatever she comes up with. Cliff, text me your address. The throbbing behind my eyes intensifies. Luce, I don't... Fuck! She yells. You probably don't even know what a cell phone is. I know what a cell phone is, I shoot back. Yeah, the clunky TV remote-looking ones from the early 2000s, she jokes. Both of my eyebrows lift. Everything is different now, huh? My voice is low, but not that flirtatious purr I used on the girl at the front desk. I sound sad. I need to man the fuck up. It is, she agrees. But don't worry, I'm gonna take care of you, reintroduce you to the wild, and teach you how to play Pokemon Go. I know how to play Pokemon, I grumble. She laughs again. This is way different, trust me. It uses GPS and... Okay, mercy, my head hurts. Her giggle, however, is a soothing mother's stroke across my forehead. It reminds me of better times. I'm gonna come down there, okay? You don't have to do that, I tell her. I'm supposed to be a man. It should be me taking care of her, not the other way around. She snorts. Dude, she says, trust me, you need a guide, and I'm currently on vacation, licking my wounds. I suddenly remember what the receptionist read to me. You got married? No, she says, almost sadly. It's against my rules. What are you, a nun? For a second, it feels like I've gone back 20 years in time, like we're just kids busting each other's balls. Nuns, she says, don't have one-night stands. I nearly choke. I don't ever want to know about your sex life. You sure? You don't want to live vicariously? Must have been awful lonely in prison. I can practically hear her smirking. No, I tell her firmly. A few seconds pass. My voice softens. Hey, Luce. Thanks. Her voice is so small when she finally responds. No, Cliff. Thank you. I shake my head, wondering if other people have these kinds of conversations. Sighing, I let her direct the conversation for a few. She rattles off times and schedules, then promises to be at my room before checkout time. Please set a wake-up call, she begs. Yeah, yeah. I smile, though. Hey, Luce, what's Facebook?
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at BenjaminDouglasBooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.